You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. What another fun night it was on Monday at Toyota Center. Rockets 117-103 winners over the Brooklyn Nets. Really wasn't even that close. The Rockets were up 43-26 after the first quarter. They were up 20 for most of the fourth. The Brooklyn Nets cut it into it a little bit towards the end of the game. But by and large, the Rockets toyed with them. They were clearly the better team. James Harden, 37 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists, 13 of 20 from the field, 8 of 13 from 3, and that was only because he missed a couple of threes towards the very end of the game when he was pretty clearly going for 40 and just trying to add another 40-point game to his resume. The Rockets, by and large, they were just clearly the superior team, which you would expect against a Brooklyn team that's now 7-13 on the year. Perhaps more impressively, well, certainly more impressively, the Rockets are now 16-4. They've won 11 of their past 12 games. But at 16-4, they have an 800 winning percentage. They're still number one in the Western Conference. They have the tiebreaker over the Golden State Warriors. But to be winning at an 800 clip at basically the quarter point of the NBA season, 20 of 82, you're basically right at 25% right there. Next game Wednesday, home against Indiana, you will pass the quarter point. So to have an 800 winning percentage this deep into an NBA season, just pretty phenomenal play by the Rockets. We've seen it throughout the season, and now it's reflected in, well, certainly their record, but now the point differential, which, as I said, after Saturday's game is now comfortably in double digits. They further built on that with Monday night's 14-point win, even though it should have been more than that. As I said, the Nets cut into it in the final minutes of garbage time. A lot of positives to get into over the next few minutes. We'll do our usual 3 points analysis, and I want to start with the obvious, which is, folks, this was James Harden's game, just like it's been James Harden's season. He's the MVP frontrunner for a reason. 37, 10, and 8. Save your triple-double jokes. What was most spectacular about it, James went out here in the first quarter tonight at Toyota Center, had 20 points on 7 of 7 shooting. The Rockets got out to a 43-26 lead, and that set the tone early that the Nets were not going to have a chance. And the Rockets have done a really good job of that recently. The Knicks game was the one exception when the Knicks got out to that huge first quarter lead. But other than that, tonight against the Nets, last Wednesday against the Nuggets, you go back to that road trip, the Suns, the Grizzlies. When you are clearly the better team, the worst thing that you can do is let an undermanned opponent think that they're in it, think that maybe this is their night. Because, as I've said, over 82 games, you're going to have nights, you're going to have certainly stretches within individual games where it doesn't go your way. So the best thing you can do, if you're the better team, you want to assert that mental just strength, that level of dominance. You want that opponent to be demoralized, not to buy in. And with the exception of the next game, the Rockets have been doing that lately. And of course, it starts with James Harden, not just, as I said, the overall stat line, 37, 10, and 8, but coming out in the first quarter with 20 points, 7 of 7 shooting. We've gone on and on about James Harden over the weeks here on Locked On Rockets, because certainly he's the MVP frontrunner for a reason, averaging over 30 points per game, almost 10 assists, just a phenomenal season, and certainly his three-point percentage, which is now over 40%, just an incredible figure when you factor in the volume that he shoots. All of those things are great, but in addition to all the great cumulative numbers, he seems to have a great feel for the moment, in my opinion. And in this case, when you're playing a team like the Brooklyn Nets, the moment, in many cases, is the first quarter. Because if you go out there and take care of business, then all of a sudden it does become just one of 82 for the Brooklyn Nets, in which they're just sort of playing out the string, knowing that they are outmanned on the road at arguably the best team in the NBA right now. And so Harden coming out here and establishing his dominance, of course, a team best plus 22 in his 36 minutes. That was a big part of it. But let's give some love to Chris Paul as well. It wasn't a great shooting night for Chris, 4 points on 1 of 7 shooting, but in his 31 minutes, Chris Paul, 14 assists to 0 turnovers. Between James and Chris combined, 22 assists to 4 turnovers. That's phenomenal, of course, coming after Saturday's game when they had 23 assists to only 2 turnovers. So when you have your two team leaders coming out there and setting the tone like that, it makes it all the easier for the role players to fall in line and for this not to be a game where inexplicably they just don't have the juice, or whatever colloquialism you want to throw out there for whatever, we were just lethargic. That has not been the case for the Rockets the entire homestand, even though they have been clearly the better team, and there would have been an easy excuse for that to happen on one of these three games. To this point, it has not happened, and I think James Harden and Chris Paul having that attitude, setting the tone. Of course, it's great that they have that level of individual production. They're both top 10 players in the NBA, but I think it also helps the rest of your roster to fall in line when you see your star players not only playing like that, but playing like that from the jump, from the outset in the first quarter. Then it makes it all the more difficult for anyone else's energy to sag. And then, of course, you see that trickle-down effect all the way down the line. Clint Capella, 20-6 tonight. Clint had 20 points on 8 of 12 shooting in his 28 minutes. Trevor had 11 points. Ryan Anderson, his return to the starting lineup, we'll touch on that in a moment, 13 points, 3 of 7 from behind the arc, 5 of 9 overall. P.J. Tucker off the bench. He was a starter Saturday, went back to the bench tonight. No problems for him. Another smooth night defensively and offensively. Had 9 points on 3 of 5 shooting. Was plus 18 in his 21 minutes. You can go up and down the roster. Lots of positive contributions. Even Eric Gordon, who struggled from behind the arc, 1 of 10. Well, he still had 12 points, was 4 of 5 from inside the arc, and actually had a positive plus 5 in the plus minus, despite a terrible night from behind the arc for him. So really, you can go up and down the lineup. This was a very positive game for the Rockets, particularly on the offensive end of the floor, and I just think you have to give credit to the two stars for setting that level of tone. And of course, we mentioned Saturday, it was a bit of a rocky patch for Clint Capella. Well, when you have James Harden and Chris Paul giving him those constant feeds, then it's all the easier. I thought tonight was a positive step for Clint, 20 points in his 28 minutes. And I think for a guy, I don't want to say his confidence was shaken, but it hasn't been the best couple of games for Clint on this homestand. I think he got going at least offensively, and James and Clint had a lot to do with that. Final point, when we're talking about just the team as a whole, and of course, James and Chris, I'm not really going to complain about the minutes at all. I saw some folks saying, well, the Rockets have a 20-point lead in the fourth quarter. Why are James Harden and Chris Paul still playing? Well, they didn't play the whole fourth quarter. They did come out with about 2.5 minutes to go. But there are a couple of reasons why I don't have a problem with it. First things first, I do think it's important. Yeah, you do want to let Chris Paul get his conditioning back. I like having him play 31 minutes a game. You're taking a guy who's not played in the past month. Yeah, you want him to get those minutes up there, to get those repetitions, and make sure that knee is going to hold up. You want to increase his minutes slowly and steadily. That's what they've done. So I think getting Chris Paul just slowly, as they've done over the past week and a half. By the way, the Rockets have still not lost a game with Chris Paul in the lineup this season, which is a pretty phenomenal stat in its own right. But yeah, they've gone pretty slowly from about 20 minutes to 24, then upper 20s, now 31. It's a slow and steady increase, so I think you want to keep doing that with Chris specifically. Beyond that, I think you also want to get Chris and James some reps together whenever you can, and so that's why even in the fourth quarter when they had a lead of 20 points, why they brought Clint back in for one last minute with James. If you can get those guys some minutes together, all the better. As we've said, priority one for the Rockets is playing Chris when James is not on the floor, to have one elite Hall of Fame-level point guard out there at all times. But yeah, there is going to be a feeling-out process for the two of them together, so as long as no one is overextended, then I don't see any reason that that you wouldn't do that. And when you look at the box score tonight, yes, you can nitpick here and there, but I think what the Rockets are trying to avoid are these lofty 40, 42-minute per game totals. Again, the only player who was even over 31 minutes was James Harden, and he was at 36, which James, again, 28 years old, prime of his career, I don't think 36 minutes is at all bad for a guy like James Harden. Then you look at the rest of the minutes, Ryan Anderson at 26, Trevor at 29, Capella at 28, Chris at 31, PJ and Luke, Luke Bamute, 21 and 20 minutes respectively, Tarik Black in the absence of Nene at 16 minutes as your backup center. None of these minutes totals are something you look at and say, oh, that's too much, especially when you're not on a back-to-back, you're at home, you last played Saturday, you next play Wednesday. I'm not worried about the minutes totals. I get the concerns with Mike D'Antoni over the course of his career, but I think where you get into trouble is when you're playing guys like Trevor Ariza 40, 42 minutes to try and scratch out a 2-point win in Indiana, or just throwing wherever your mediocre opponent is in just a random game, 1 out of 82. If most of your players are in the upper 20s, most in the case of Chris Paul, low 30s, I don't have a problem with that. I don't think limiting a guy from, say, 28 minutes to 25 is going to be all that different at the end of the year. I think where you run into problems when you overextend a guy to a total that no one goes to, as I've said, extending Ariza into the 40s, which happened far too often last year, then that's what makes you prone on a short-term basis to acute injuries, and then all of a sudden those acute injuries can become nagging, and unless the player sits out, and that's not something the Rockets want to do, battling for the number one seed in the West, which they are now, all of a sudden those acute short-term injuries can become longer-term factors in the overall direction of a player's season, and of course, in turn, where the team as a whole is going. So that's why I didn't really have a problem with the minutes. I understand Rockets fans that are worried about that, given Mike D'Antoni's history. I'm right there with you, but I'm not going to say that this game was evidence of it, because I'm not seeing anything in the minute total tonight, and I would say the same thing for pretty much this whole homestead. I have not seen anyone with a minute total or an injury that I feel particularly alarmed by. So right now, I would not look for the other shoe to drop. Just ignore it, Fultz, because right now, your Rockets are playing pretty phenomenal basketball, led, of course, by James Harden and Chris Paul. Now, that's the first point, which, of course, team as a whole, 16-4, 11 of their past 12. Phenomenal night for James Harden again. Chris Paul, 14 assists, no turnovers. Just a great night for the Rockets as a whole and what's been a great season to this point. For the final 2 points on this show, I'm going to kind of spin it forward into more question marks. Because this show is boring if we're just going to sit here and say the Rockets are awesome. Because, yes, we know that. But the bottom line is, as awesome as the Rockets are, the Warriors aren't far behind, if any at all. And we know that from a talent standpoint, at least, this is probably the most talented roster in the history of basketball. So as good as the Rockets are, they have to stay at that level, if not get even better, to actually win a title this season. The bar is so incredibly high. So no matter how well the team seems to play, you need to nitpick. You need to find whatever your flaws are. Because, yes, the Warriors are going to be equipped in May to exploit whatever those are. And from the Rockets' standpoint, I wouldn't say it was a flaw, but the interesting thing tonight, besides the obvious, the guys who had a good game in the box score, all that sort of stuff, was the return of Ryan Anderson to the starting lineup. And if you listen to Saturday's postgame show after the Knicks, you know that I was a big fan of the P.J. Tucker experiment. He started Saturday the Rockets. They said that it was because Ryan hadn't really practiced that week. He missed, actually, the Denver game last week, last Wednesday, with an illness. He had been sick, and so he hadn't practiced. And Mike D'Antoni used it as a chance to see what would happen. And, of course, they got off to a poor start. I don't think that was because of P.J. Tucker. But they used it as a chance. And tonight was more interesting because you go against Brooklyn, a team you're pretty much better than, and the Rockets knew that going in. So what happens? Do they go with the hot hand, or do they go back to the status quo? And the interesting thing is, the Rockets, as Mike D'Antoni put it before the game, went back to normal. They went with Ryan Anderson as the starter at the four spot again. I got a chance to ask him about it before the game, and he referred to it as, once in a while, we'll experiment. And so that's what he did with P.J. Tucker on Saturday night. I think the results were pretty good, and I think there are certain matchups, as I said, particularly teams where you need to switch a lot, a.k.a. the Warriors, where that could potentially be a weapon that you deploy down the road. But for now, over the balance of an 82-game regular season, I don't think the Rockets want to upset the apple cart. I don't think they want to go away from what's working, what's worked so well this season. And even last year, when they got off to a 31-9 start, 55-27 on the season, Ryan Anderson has been a big part of that. So, again, I was not expecting the Rockets to make any radical changes based on Saturday. I said in my postgame podcast that I expected Ryan to be returned to the starting lineup, and he was. Yet at the same time, it's interesting to see the Rockets actually do that. Because if you want to, I don't know, if you could make an argument, if you really wanted to, that if this season is all about the Warriors and how can you catch them, well then the Rockets should perhaps just go through as much of the season as possible with the rotation that they would have when they play the Warriors. However, I think the counter-argument to that, and I think the Rockets would say they agree, is that because the Warriors are so good, there's not really one well, first off, it's not like you can really practice how you're going to play against the Warriors against other teams anyway, because the personnel just isn't there. It's not like you can look at the Brooklyn Nets defensive personnel and pretend like you're playing against the Warriors. It just doesn't work that way. But beyond that, because the Warriors are so good, there's going to be a ton of mixing and matching who's hot on a given night, because the bar is so damn high, you're just going to have to ride the hot hand, and sometimes it may not even make that much basketball sense. So I think, to some degree, you're going to have to mix and match, experiment, whatever you want to call it, in that in that situation no matter what. So there's no point in being married to this lineup and saying this is the way it's going to have to be. Because again, even if Ryan doesn't start, there's a role for him off the bench, and there's also potentially a role for Ryan as a stretch five against Golden State, just as there was in that opener in Oakland when he played some five off the bench when Clint Capella was largely limited, I think, to about 20 minutes or so, because that that death lineup of the Warriors with Draymond Green at the center spot makes it so difficult to play a traditional center, even an athletic one, like Capella. So it's not as if all of a sudden, because the Rockets see P.J. Tucker potentially as a starter against the Warriors, that they're just going to treat every game that way. I think it's interesting that the Rockets considered it, and it's not like D'Antoni shied away from it on Monday. When we asked him about it before the game, before the Brooklyn game, he said point blank that we like to experiment from time to time. And I thought, you know, he didn't mention Golden State by name, but it doesn't take a genius to figure out who he might be experimenting with that in mind. But at the same time, he referred to Ryan, they said, back to normal. This is what the Rockets know. They've been doing it. Certainly the mainstays of the Rockets, James Harden, Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella, there's a certain comfort level there. And I think both Ryan and PJ, you can even throw Luke Bamute in that mix as well. They're all such established veterans. I don't think that they're going to mind whether they're coming off the bench, starting, because what they're looking to do, it's not like it radically changes based on exactly where they start the game, because by and large, they're going to be playing with a lot of the same players either way, because minutes get staggered. You guys know how Mike D'Antoni juggles the rotation. But I just thought it was interesting the way that Mike referred to it again as, will experiment from time to time. It's not like he's saying that, oh, it was just an injury. No, he's owning that, you know, it's something that they're potentially looking at down the road. It's something that they could do, but at the same time, there's no real reason to deploy that now in November, especially not with everything working for the Rockets. Ryan Anderson's been a part of some very good Rockets teams over the past two seasons to this point. They're winning at an 800 clip this year with him. They started 31-9 last year, 55 wins overall. There's no reason to make any sort of radical change there at the moment. It's just once in a while, yeah, that P.J. Tucker thing is something you might see again, depending on the exact matchup. And, of course, that could be something you could see on a longer-term basis if and when we get to that finally long-awaited Rockets-Warriors showdown in May. But, of course, there's a long way to go to actually get to that point. Final point of my 3 points tonight. This is the 117-103 Monday night win over Brooklyn. Really much more convincing than that if you look at the score. Rockets led by 17 after one. They're up by 20 most of the fourth. Nets made it look a tiny bit closer in garbage time. As I said, first point was just the general dominance of the team as a whole, which is certainly a leading theme when you're 16-4, 111 in your past 12. But I do believe in nitpicking, especially when the bar is as high as Golden State has set it these days. And, you know, you can look at the usage of Ryan Anderson and P.J. Tucker the last two games. Other thing I think you should probably look at right now is Eric Gordon, who, as I said earlier, just 1 of 10 from behind the arc. Now, he was 4 of 5 from inside the arc, did have 12 points in his 29 minutes. So it wasn't like he was a non-factor. He was a plus 5, so it's not like all of a sudden the Rockets were terrible with Eric on the floor. But what's key to note is that this is not really new. Eric started off November red hot from behind the arc, and starting Sunday the 12th, that's the last 2.5 weeks, barely over 2 weeks. We can just say it's 15 days, basically. I'm going to read you guys his 3-point totals. 3 of 11, 0 of 7, 1 of 7, 3 of 10, 2 of 7, and 1 of 10. For the year now, he's at about 32%. That's below average on the season, and over the past 2 weeks, he's been much worse than that. Now, some folks might wonder, with Eric, it's easy to tie everything back to injuries because it's kind of been the story of his career. And even last year, we all know he started the first half of the year over 40% from behind the arc. Second half of the year, he was right at 32%. And he went from being a dynamic three-point shooter, the guy who won the three-point contest, to just kind of a volume shooter. And that was a big difference in the Rockets, who, of course, were 31-9. First half of the year, and not anywhere near as dominant, 24-18 in the second half. And I get the history of that, and it's certainly something to monitor. At the moment, however, I'm not really that worried about it. Now, I do realize that Eric did miss the game last Wednesday with a minor calf injury against the Nuggets. I'm kind of the belief that that game, that's one of those, the Rockets had only one game last week. You went from Saturday to Saturday, only one game. So if you have anybody with any sort of nagging injury at all, that's the perfect opportunity to rest them, because it's not like you're just getting one day off. You're basically getting an entire week off. So there's, if there's any tiny injury at all, then yeah, you can rest that up. But I'm not really of the belief, at least not at this point in time, that, well, that injury is why he's struggling from behind the arc, and maybe they need to sit him longer to clean it up. Because if you actually watch him, this is where you don't just need to look at the box score, you need to actually watch him on the floor. He's still explosive. We've talked about the Clipper athleticism, Eric Gordon. That was a theme starting with opening night in Golden State when he had that crazy dunk. That's been a big theme this year, is how much he seems to have regained some of his earlier athleticism. I don't know about you guys, I haven't noticed that going away. He still looks very springy to me on his drives. He's doing things off the dribble, going towards the bucket, that I've not seen him do in years. And as I said, Monday night, he was 4-5 from inside the arc. So I don't think it's as simple as Eric's playing hurt, and all of a sudden he's hurt again, and this incredible start to the year when he and Capella were basically both at all-star level production, all of a sudden that's gone because now he's hurt again. I don't necessarily think that. I think a couple of things. I think first off, because Eric is such a good shooter, and you put him in this Rockets system. Now, let's give kudos to the Rockets. The system as a whole, Rockets were 20 of 50 from behind the arc Monday night. They have now had 18 or more three-pointers as a team collectively in five consecutive games. In all of NBA history, no team until this stretch had had more than two consecutive games with 18 made threes as a team. The Rockets now have five. That's because the Rockets are just redrawing the map, of course, not just in terms of three-point accuracy, but in terms of just overall three-point volume, how much a part of the overall offense it is. We all know how revolutionary this scheme is. And where I think this impacts Eric Gordon is that it's not just a matter of he's missing his shots. I do think there are some issues with shot selection because he's such a good shooter, and then you put him within the confines of this offense, and I think overall he's taking more shots than any. I think he's taking far more shots than anyone with that skill set in the NBA would do, both now and especially historically. So I think I would argue that I think his percentage is always going to be a little bit artificially skewed to the downside because of just his extremely high volume. Now, that's not to say that that's just an excuse and he can shoot 30% because the Rockets are taking such a high volume, it's okay. No, you, as with anything, you can do it too much, and I think it's possible that in addition to just the way the system works, I think maybe he's getting a little too trigger-happy and taking some shots that that otherwise he shouldn't, just because he's feeling so good and it's so much part of the offense. It's a balance. Maybe some of it's the high volume and some of it's that he's being a little too much of a gunner, being a little too aggressive from time to time, just because he's obviously such a good fit in this offense. Another part of it could just be pure randomness. We know shooters go through slumps. At the end of the day, I highly doubt that James Harden shoots above 40% from three for the entire season. As remarkable as this is, when you factor in James Harden's career averages, the fact that he's taking a phenomenal amount of threes, over 11 per game, I feel pretty confident that James is probably going to settle in somewhere around 37%, maybe 36, maybe 38. But right now, James is just hot, and that happens. Maybe Eric is just cold. That's a part of it, too. But I guess where I'm trying to go with this, at this point, it's been 2 weeks in which he's shooting well below 30%, well below 25%, actually, I believe, from three. And for the year, he's at 32%, which is below average. And for a guy who's basically known as your assassin, a guy who won the three-point shootout last year, was over 40% for the first half of last season, that's a little low. Now, I think it's probably unfair to expect anyone on this team to shoot 40% from three based on the, as I said, the incredibly high volume, but certainly you'd like him to be closer to the mid-30s than Eric has been. But based on what I'm seeing on the floor now, maybe we hear something off the court, maybe there is an injury, I'm not saying it's not, and we do know there was the minor calf injury, but I'm just not seeing something on the floor that suggests, here we go again, he's gotten hurt, and then the version we saw the first couple of weeks of the year is gone. To me, he looks very explosive. He looks himself. I don't think that he's necessarily playing hurt and that this issue has come up again. I think the bigger factor with Eric, some sort of combination of too many shots, not being selective enough, just randomness and poor luck. But again, he's too good of a shooter. It's not a matter of his shooting. And players do go through slumps. And it could be just a matter of he needs to work with the Rockets shooting coaches at practice and get his form back. There are a lot of reasons. But no, I don't think we're at a point where we need to worry about Eric Gordon, the shooter. I think we all know his form over the course of his career. He's about as good as it gets in the NBA, a truly elite shooter. I think he's going to figure out, unless he's hurt. And based on what I've seen, what my eyes are telling me, watching him on the floor, I don't think he's playing hurt. I still think he has that elite athleticism. It's just we're still in a relatively small sample size, 2 weeks, and it just has not been friendly for him. And you know, we're still relatively early in the year. We're not even really 6 weeks in. And so you have a bad two-week stretch, and when you've only been playing about 5.5 weeks or so, then, yeah, those 2 weeks can stick out like a sore thumb in your season-long averages. And I think that's where it's at with Eric. And again, it's not like it's any reason to panic because, yeah, you look at his overall production. Folks, his advanced metrics, he's been fabulous. Even some of these games that he shot terribly from three, his plus-minus figures have still been outstanding because, yes, he is driving to the rim. He is playing active defense. And I think those things reflect that he is healthy. So I'm not overly concerned about him from a big-picture standpoint based on this slump. Yeah, at the same time, I think it's time to acknowledge that, yes, it is a slump, and at some point, when the Rockets play tougher opponents, and this has not exactly been murderer's row of late, especially all three of these recent games at home, you know, if you want to get the Rockets to absolute peak efficiency, you need to get Eric Gordon, not just the defender, not just the slasher, but Eric Gordon, the shooter, back as well. And I know it's boring to hear, but I think some of it's just run-of-the-mill basketball stuff. He needs more practice reps, make sure his form is sorted out, get more selective, get with the coaching. I don't think it's a matter of all of a sudden he's hurt or that there's something dramatically wrong in terms of his season arc or whatever you want to call it. I think he's going to be fine. I think it's just going to take work predominantly off the floor and, of course, on it, maybe being a little more selective until he truly feels like he's got that stroke back. But again, this is all nitpicking because the Rockets, again, 16-4, 11 wins in their past 12 games, another phenomenal performance on Monday night. It's just, yeah, as the official home for podcast commentary of the Houston Rockets, I know you guys want to win a title, and if you want to win a title, you've got to nitpick everything, because if you want to catch the Golden State Warriors in terms of their level of dominance, three Western Conference titles, two NBA titles in the past 3 years, then yeah, you've got to be as close to perfect as you absolutely can be, and that probably involves Eric Gordon shooting a three-point percentage that's, well, certainly higher than the 10% he shot on Monday night, but probably a little bit higher than the 32% he's at for the season as well. So, with all that said, I think we can wrap up this brief postgame episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and postgame commentary on your Houston Rockets. Again, I'm your host, Ben DuBose. If you want to follow me or the show on Twitter for real-time updates, you can do so at Ben DuBose or at Locked On Rockets. Also, email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, or leave us a rating or review, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, any of our podcast sources. Just search for Locked On Rockets, and you can find any of our programs across this Locked On Podcast network. And if you leave us a 5-star review, that's the best way for us to continue to be viable to advertisers and continue to be viable as the only daily podcast covering your Houston Rockets. Once again, the happy final from Toyota Center Monday night, Rockets 117, Nets 103. Rockets now 16-4 on the year, winners of 11 of their past 12, now an .800 winning percentage on the year. Rockets close out this four-game homestand Wednesday against Indiana before hitting the road for a three-game West Coast swing starting this weekend in Los Angeles. Until then, hope everybody gets some rest. We'll be talking with you again, as I said, Wednesday. We might have an off-day episode tomorrow. I'll see what I can wrangle up as far as interviews, but certainly Wednesday we'll be back with you to cover that Pacers game, the finale of the four-game homestand at Toyota Center. And if you want any more coverage of Houston sports, don't forget about Locked On Texans. That's our sister show on this Locked On Podcast Network, hosted by Robert Lind and Brian Patterson. They do a great job. Robert of Houston Sports Talk, Brian Patterson over at House of Houston. They do a great job covering the Houston landscape, specifically the Texans. They've got a Monday night game in progress as I tape this podcast against the Ravens. If you want to hear about that, for better or for worse, with the Texans since Deshaun Watson's injury, largely for worse. But either way, you want to hear about what happened in that one, please check out Locked On Texans. They have great coverage as well, just as you can find here at Locked On Rockets and across this great Locked On Podcast Network. So until Wednesday, hope everybody gets some rest. Look forward to talking with you guys again once the Rockets take on the Pacers Wednesday night at Toyota Center. Until then, have a good evening. Look forward to talking with you guys again very soon right here on Locked On Rockets.